We're sharing some rock and roll ghost stories and brushes with rock and roll greatness. Hey, if there's anyone out there who's been to the Joshua Tree Inn, of course, the California motel where the great Graham Parsons died. Of course, the journey to his grave has been well documented. His body was stolen, and they tried to set it ablaze and cremate him as per Graham's final wishes before the police interceded. But it is said at the Joshua Tree Inn where he died, there is a journal in the room. And people write in there after staying there about waking up at 4 a.m. and seeing Graham Parsons walk across the pool. Or if you've been to New Haven, Connecticut at Yale's Woolsey Hall, which is said to serve as a veritable hub for the afterlife, you may see the ghost of Jimi Hendrix, who some believe occasionally wafts in to play guitar. All right, those are the kinds of stories we're looking for. You share them, and I will be all ears. Back with more of Open Lines on Coast to Coast AM. Stay with us. Shazam! That's the name of the app I was trying to think of. And it helps you identify. This is not a commercial. I'm not looking for a freebie, but it's a great app if you're trying to identify a song you heard on the radio or on TV, and no one's telling you what it is. You just engage Shazam, and it'll identify the song. Remarkable technology. And I mentioned Graham Parsons. I was trying to remember who it was that stole his body. He was road manager Phil Kaufman, the legendary Phil Kaufman, who stole his body because Graham always wanted to be cremated, and I guess Phil felt the family was not following Graham's final wishes. So he stole the body out of the mortuary, drove it to Joshua Tree National Park, and set the body on fire at Joshua Tree. Remarkable story. I would love to get Phil Kaufman on Coast to Coast sometime. All right, let's say hello to Lori's in Pennsylvania. Lori, first-time caller, welcome.
Hi.
Hi there.
How are you tonight?
I'm terrific. How are you?
I'm nervous.
No need. It's just you and me talking over the back fence.
Okay. So how do I just begin telling you what I had said about with the phone call you had earlier, speaking about the operator and that the line was disconnected? I said my story is something similar, but not quite. My grandmother had gotten ill with cancer, and I helped my family take care of her. But 2 weeks before she was getting ready to pass was my birthday, and I had a strong feeling that she was going to pass on my birthday. And I shared it with my mom and a few family people, and they told me that that was wrong. That was sorcery, witchcraft. People couldn't predict those kind of things, whatever. So I just wanted to say anything more about it. Well, 2 weeks came, November 7th, it was my birthday, and my mom called me at work, and my grandma passed that morning on my birthday. So, of course, it bothered me pretty much. So I was about 22, and I, couldn't figure out why or what the reason was. And my grandma believed and felt that she was going to heaven, but she was scared to death to pass over, and she just couldn't get past that feeling. So she shared it a lot with me, and I didn't understand at the time. But 2 weeks after she passed from my birthday, so that would have been 14, 21st was actually approximately my dad's birthday, November 21st. I had a dream that morning, and she came to me at the foot of the bed that the bedroom was shared, and said, "Read 1 John chapter 5, verses 3 through 8. Not John, but 1 John." And that's all she said. And she left, and I didn't know what it meant. I didn't know my Bible. I woke up, and I was like, "Grandma," and she was gone. And I got my shower, started getting ready in the morning, and said to my mom, "I had this dream about Grandma." And my mom looked at me funny, of course, because I had already shared something about my birthday, and that came true. So now she was really looking at me funny and a little bit upset. And I said, "She told me to read 1 John chapter 5, verses 3 through 8. Not John, but 1 John." I said, "That's all she said." And she left, and I don't know what it means. And my mom looked it up, and she knew a little bit more about her Bible than I did. And after she did, she looked at me and said, "I don't understand how you're doing this, and I don't know how or why." But the verses had said about salvation, well, about heaven, and it had said that to be sure that your salvation is not in vain, and that your sufferings on this earth are not in vain, and that the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit are one, and that there's nothing on this earth that you can't go through and accomplish and be, because if you believe, you're going to be there. It's there, and it's real. The Father, Son, and Holy Spirit are one. And that's pretty much, if you read those verses 3 through 8 in different versions, say it differently, is what it comes down to.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So did that change
questions.
Now? Does that change the way that you look at the Bible?
It had then, of course, at that point in my life. But even as I was trying to get on the radio, the phone call with you, that always that, you know, there's always that doubt in the back of your mind of that kind of feeling of things. And I was like, oh, I'll never get through. And then I heard his voice, no, just keep trying. You'll get through. You'll get through. You will. And I did, and actually got disconnected from you on the first time when I had called from my phone, from my Bluetooth. And I just thought, I'm not giving up. I'm just going to keep trying until, you know, I take calls anymore.
Well, there's a reason you got on, and someone out there maybe needed to hear that as well. And I'm glad you shared it with us, Lori.
Me too. I really appreciate taking my call, and thank you for being so polite and kind, and God bless you.
God bless you, Lori. Let's say hi to Alan in Ogden, Utah. Hello, Alan. Good morning. Welcome to Coast to Coast.
Hello, Richard. Hey, thank you for taking my call. I appreciate this opportunity.
My pleasure.
I've had an encounter, I guess I'd call it that. Actually, I was at a class that Mickey Hart was teaching in Salt Lake City, a drumming class, and I've been a drummer since I was a kid, you know, particularly shamanic kind of drumming. And I had a drum that I had made that was, you know, very handmade and pretty unique looking. And Mickey came right over to me, and he said, "That's a very powerful drum." And I said, "Oh, well, thank you." I was really surprised he even noticed me. And so I always thought, later on, years later in the early 90s, I got involved in ghost investigation. In fact, I had a documentary that I produced on orbs that Whitley Strieber carried on his website for about a year. And I was using that drum there and found, you know, with infrared photography, that in fact it did draw orbs to it when I was playing it there, and that there was definitely a kind of communication that drum seemed to draw from it that, you know, Mickey Hart pointed out to me that he felt that he was aware of when I was taking that workshop from him.
Fascinating. And you made the drum?
Yes, I made the drum, yeah.
And out of what material?
Well, it's made out of rough sewn wood. It's was sort of in the shape of a djembe, you know, the African drum, if you're familiar with that.
Right, right.
But I used different kinds of shamanic elements on it. You know, I had some bells on it, you know, which are supposed to, you know, keep away negative spirits. I had some crystals and things attached to it, and I'd done a little bit of artistic work on it, you know, just for the trying to enhance it. And so I guess he noticed the decoration, but when he came up and checked it out, he said, "Oh yeah, that has a powerful energy to it." So that was my encounter with him. And
well, that's a great story. And an earlier caller also mentioned, you know, the connection with instruments, musical instruments, and the spirit world. And you know, it makes sense because musical instruments are all about vibration. And we're led to believe that so too is the spirit world, and why some people can see them and some can't, or hear them and some can't. It all has to do with one's vibratory rate, I suppose.
Yeah,
all right, great story.
And also another factor that I found kind of interesting relating to that is that, you know, I think drums in general, you know, not just particularly, you know, the drum that Mickey Hart liked, but drums in general really can be used to draw, you know, the spirit of attention. A particular cemetery where I was trying that out, experimenting, you know, doing some work with the video I did for Whitley, is a city small town cemetery, but the vicinity, the hillside where it is actually a place which was a Native American site where they wintered over, the Shoshone, I believe it was. And so there were Native Americans buried in that vicinity too, which I think has to do with the spirit entities that were there.
Interesting. Great call. Thank you for sharing. I hope you'll call again. Let's say hi to Billy is in Illinois. Hello, Billy. Welcome to Coast AM.
How you doing there, Richard? Man, great show. This is the first time I ever heard you on Coast to Coast on this Friday night, and it just so happened to be talking about the Grateful Dead. I mean, that's one subject. Ever since my first show, there's no way I could ever escape them. By the way, I'm listening to you on 1470WMBD.com.
All right. Well, thank you for that.
Right, right. So you're out of Toronto, huh?
Indeed. Yes.
Yes. You ever heard of Cherry Beach?
Oh, yes. In fact, my boys and my wife were there a few days ago. There's a go-kart track not too far from there, and they were there for a birthday party. So, yeah, we get down to Cherry Beach.
Do they still throw them great sunset parties out there, you know, the EDM music and...
I don't know about that. I don't know. That's I'm usually, if I'm not here, I'm in bed for 9 o'clock. So I wouldn't know.
I understand that.
But we have some great beaches here. Cherry Beach is one of them, and another wonderful beach where we go and have bonfires at night occasionally. Out in the East End.
Yeah,
terrific beaches here in Toronto.
Well, look, I called in and I talked to the call screener. What's his name?
That would be the great Tom Danheiser.
Tom, great job. You do a great job. You let me through. Anyway, look, I gotta tell you, my brush. I've had a couple of brushes with greatness. I finished my last year of high school in Munich, Germany, and. The Pyromania album by Def Leppard had just kind of was coming out, like in that winter when I was over there going to high school. And they had, you know, like setting up for their tour and getting ready to go out on their tour, they're practicing and whatnot. And they played this little place called the Löwenbräu Keller. Löwenbräu beer and
Löwenbräu
brewery. Right. I don't know. I'm sure. Now you're probably going to have to pay a bunch of money for that. But anyway, it was like the loudest concert. The whole school, there was only like 50 people in the whole high school that I was going to. And the whole school was there. And then the next morning, we went to class, and you couldn't hear nothing. I was deaf for 3 days. And then I was over there, and I was in this class. The next morning, I'm a senior in a class with a bunch of freshmen, right? And I'm just sitting there at my desk, and the one teacher is like looking at me. He's like, "Hey, Mr. Fish. Your eyes are so bloodshot." I said, "Well, I got pink eye in this one, and then this eye, I went and saw Def Leppard last night." Anyway, years later, comes around, Def Leppard is like early 2000s. It was before 9/11. Early 2000s, Def Leppard comes back to the U.S. for kind of making a big push in the U.S. again. And I was working as a monitor engineer and a truck driver for a audio company out of Charlotte, Michigan. And the promoter booked the show. It was like the second or third show that Def Leppard was playing in the U.S. in like 20 years.
We got about 2 or 3 minutes here, so.
Okay, yeah. It was in Seymour, Wisconsin.
Right.
At the Seymour County Fair. And they overbooked it. the stadium only holds maybe 5,000. There was 10,000 people there. It was just probably the greatest fair Seymour, Wisconsin ever had. And during the whole day, I'm in there. And the whole reason why I got into the audio industry was because I became I was a Grateful Dead fan. I went and saw Grateful Dead with Jerry. And after Jerry died, I had to find something to do, right? So there I was. We had the PA set up for these guys, and they come in, and, you know, early in the morning, 7 a.m., sitting there jamming out to Dire Wolf, tuning up the PA. Def Leppard comes walking in, their sound guys and audio engineers and their tour managers. They're just like, oh, man. Okay, this is going to be a great day. All right. Well, thanks for listening to me. Richard?
Yes.
Grateful Dead fans across the world, God bless America. God bless Coast to Coast.
All right, my friend. Well, yes. Great. The Grateful Dead inspired, it sounds like, a lot of audio engineers and sound engineers, that great wall of sound created by Owsley Stanley III. Actually, I do have time for one more call, I think. We're going to get Sam in West Virginia, east of the Rockies. Sam, good morning. Welcome.
Wow. Hi, Richard. How you doing? It's great talking to you.
Likewise.
Hey, I'm one of those security guards. I'm here in the coal mines of West Virginia, back in the woods here, listening to you every night.
Oh, wonderful. We love the security guards. We love the truckers.
Yeah. Real quick, I have two incidents. One about 1970 when I was in college. We had a concert, and after the concert, I went to a regular party, Saturday night party, you know, and both Rare Earth was at the party. I got to talk with them and get to know them. And Fifth Dimension was at the party. It was really, I'd love to tell you about the details of the party, but I won't get into that.
The Fifth Dimension with Marilyn McCoo.
Oh, man, it was great. But the big one to me is, I think it was 1971. I had dropped out of college. I was all upset about all the assassinations and the shootings at Kent State. And I went to California, where my brother was living, Palo Alto, California, where Stanford University is. And his girlfriend, he had a girlfriend that was from that area, and we became good friends. And so I was walking downtown University Avenue in Palo Alto with my brother's girlfriend, and she saw a friend of hers, and she's talking to him, and I'm just, like, standing there. You know, there's a lot of Mexican type people, you know, out there, and he just looked like another Mexican to me, you know. And she said, "Sam," she said, "this is my friend Jerry. We went to school together. He has a band." I go, "Oh, okay, yeah, hi, Jerry." I didn't know who it was.
It was Jerry Garcia.
It was Jerry Garcia. Yeah.
There you go.
So that's my story. Thank you.
The man himself. My pleasure. Thank you. All right, well, let's hope we can get some more great ghost stories and more brushes with rock greatness. Joe is in the Bronx. He's standing by. Billy, did we take Billy in Illinois? Rick in Denver and Carl in Charlotte, North Carolina. We'll get to all of you and more. And we're going to go into the break with Ex-Ambassadors. This is a song called Renegades, the most successful song for this band from Ithaca, New York, featured in the Jeep Renegade TV commercial. Back with more on Coast to Coast AM. Always a pleasure and an honor to sit in for George Norrie. And if you like what you're hearing tonight this morning, you might wish to check out my weekly syndicated radio program, The Conspiracy Show. It airs live Sunday nights, 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. Eastern, and in delay on about 40 affiliates across North America. For more information and a list of affiliates, visit my website, strangeplanet.ca, strangeplanet.ca, or download the free Conspiracy Show app, and you can listen anywhere in the world. Please check out my podcast, Conspiracy Unlimited. New episodes drop every Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and my other podcast, The Rock and Roll Twilight Zone, part of the Jericho Network. And this week's episode, which drops Wednesday, part two of the life and times and tragic death of AC/DC's Bon Scott. Then the following week, The 440 Hertz Conspiracy, The Rock and Roll Twilight Zone, available on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Back to more of your calls. Open lines on Coast to Coast when we continue. First-time caller Scott is in Phoenix. Welcome to Coast AM, Scott.
Hi, how are you?
Terrific, thank you.
Good. Is this George?
It's Richard, actually.
Oh, Richard, okay.
I'm sitting in for George.
Yeah. I was listening to your show. I woke up and I had the radio on last night. And I just wrote a book called Scoundrels in Paradise, and I got a movie deal for my life rights with Warner Brothers. And I was a roommate from Joy Covington, used to live in my home in Mill Valley, California. He was
right.
The drummer for the Airplane.
Right.
And I knew Nicky Hopkins really well. I jammed with all these guys, never professionally, but just for fun. But I wrote about that, all that in my book. I did a movie with Jimi Hendrix when I was 16, worked on a movie in Maui, Hawaii called Rainbow Bridge.
Right, right. Another one of his bands, that's right.
Yeah. I knew all those guys, Marty Balin.
Just passed away today, or yesterday, actually.
Yeah, John Cipollino, good friend of mine. I played with Jack Bruce, with Nicky, John, you know, all those, everyone. I was a drummer, but just, anyway, I wrote that all in my book. It's a good story.
Sounds like you played with a lot of the greats. You're very fortunate.
More than that, I knew John Lee Hooker, Carlos Santana was my next door neighbor. Jam with them. Nice man.
Well, thank you for checking in, Scott. Great to hear from you. Thanks for calling, and I hope you'll call again. On the wild card line is Carl in Charlotte, North Carolina. Hey, Carl, how are you?
Richard, good to talk to you, sir.
How are things in Charlotte? Is everything settled down?
Well, yeah, we didn't really get as much rain. We got really lucky, but those people down east are really hurting. I mean,
yes.
The rivers are now still cresting, as you've heard. It's just terrible, which is it's a bad problem because people think, well, the storm's gone, everybody's okay, but the real damage is still being done, and it'll take years to another one will probably unfortunately hit before everybody's done rebuilding. But we need all the help we can get down here.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Hey, weren't you guest hosting the night Mike Nesmith was on?
No, I was not. I'm not sure
Dave
who.
Schrader. I'm sorry, it was Dave.
Yeah. Yes. I'm a big Michael Nesmith fan.
Oh, that was one of my highlights of my life was talking to one of my idols, which was the Beatles and the Monkees. But anyway, and I got to say, my condolences go out tonight to the family of Marty Balin and this whole Airplane and Starship family. Sad to hear of his passing. What a great voice.
Yes, 76.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Very.
They're all getting up there. All the legends are getting up there, aren't they?
And they're all, and him and Paul Kantner, I think Paul just passed away last year, so two within 1 year from that band.
Yes, yes. And the original lead singer, lead singer, not Grace Slick, but the original lead singer of Airplane died the same day Paul Kantner did.
Who was that? Not Yorma, no.
The female singer, I can't remember.
Okay.
It'll come to me.
Yeah, I met a few people. I met like Meat Loaf, and I met John Mellencamp, really nice guy. But I got to tell you a story, which is probably timely because, you know, the court in San Francisco overturned that lawsuit of Spirit versus Led Zeppelin. So one
yes.
time I used to go to this club in Youngstown, Ohio. I grew up in Youngstown, only an hour from Cleveland, and used to go see a lot of bands. I've seen too many bands to even mention there. But so I go to see Spirit, right? I see in the paper Spirit's coming. So I know a little bit about them, their hits from the 60s and 70s, and didn't know a lot about the personnel. So I go to the club, and I'm having a couple drinks, and this real skinny guy comes up and starts talking to me, and he has a stage pass on his jeans, and he's real skinny, and I thought, well, this guy must be a roadie or something, because, you know, a band member's not going to be out here before the show. It was only like about a half hour before the show. So I'm talking to him, and I'm in a band at the time, and I'm, you know, just having a good time talking to him, and I said, are these guys any good? And he goes, yeah, they're pretty good. They're okay. so he goes, well, man, I got to go. He goes, I got to get ready for a show. So he leaves, and the curtain opens, you know, and everybody's down front partying, and they start playing, you know, I've Got a Line on You and all their hits and Mr. Skin and all that stuff, Nature's Way. And I look, and the guy playing guitar is the guy I was talking to, Randy California, the late, great Randy California.
Ah, yes.
And he points at me, And I pointed him, and I had the, must have had the most sheepish look on my face, not knowing who he was. And, man, I just started rocking out. It was a great show. And several years later, he passed away in Hawaii. He was swimming, and he never came back. So I always felt bad about that. Yeah, and his real name was Randy Wolf. So that's part of this lawsuit against Led Zeppelin, is that they stole his song, Taurus, which they had toured together. So either subconsciously or consciously, Jimmy must have lifted his. But it's a common, like I was telling Tommy, it's a common progression. That
sure, it happens. It happens.
Sharp. Yeah. Yeah, so, you know, people get sued for plagiarism. But I wanted to tell you real quick, Jimi Hendrix actually gave him his name because when he was like 15, he wanted him to go on the road with him. And he knew two guitar players named Randy, but he didn't. He never said the other one. And to differentiate them, he called him Randy California because he was from California. But his mother wouldn't let him go with him. He was only 15 and said, no, you can't go. So evidently, Jimmy discovered him at an early age and gave him his nickname, Randy California, which stuck through the years.
Wow.
That was a great story.
That is a great story. Fantastic.
Right, yeah,
the leads. The first lead singer from Airplane was Signe Anderson.
And really? Okay, I might have heard of that passing.
She died the same day as Paul Kantner, both of them 74.
Yeah, very uncanny, yeah. Well, there. Take care, man. Have a good one.
All right, thank you. Great call. Appreciate it. All right, let's see. We will go next to, is it Rick in Denver? On the west of the Rockies. Rick, are you there?
Yeah, here I am.
Hey, welcome to Coast AM. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. Good morning. Thank you so much for taking the call.
My pleasure.
I love this show so much, and I love all the variety of topics, but when you start talking about rock and roll, that's pretty cool, too, because I have two quick stories about brushing with rock stars. And they're both, I was living in Minneapolis and uptown on Lagoon Street, pretty much right in the heart of uptown Minneapolis. And there was a grocery store four blocks up the hill, and there were a couple lakes two blocks down the hill. And me and my roommate used to go shopping late at night, like, you know, after midnight. We'd take our bikes, even though it was only four blocks. But anyway, we'd take our bikes up there to go get groceries, and we often ran into Dave Perner, who is the lead singer of Soul Asylum, that you had on Wave Train.
Right, right.
One of your bumpers, right. So I actually ended up, I mean, it was like at least five or six times that we would run into him going shopping at the same grocery store, because he lived in the same neighborhood. I don't know where he lived, but it was somewhere nearby. And so he's a great guy, by the way. And I'm so glad he got, because right about the time that we were shopping together, so to speak, and we didn't literally shop together. I mean, we kind of split up after that, whatever. But anyway, the Runaway Train was like right about to be released or had just been released. It was right about the same time. So anyway, I was saying I lived on Lagoon Street, and the grocery store was up the hill, but down the hill were a couple lakes, and there was a bridge going across kind of a canal that connected the lakes. And I used to go down there with my guitar to play late at night because I didn't want to bother the neighbors. And I could get some cool acoustics in this tunnel underneath the bridge. And one night, Prince was riding his motorcycle about as fast as he could handle around on the bike path around these lakes at about 2-3 in the morning when there's no one around, but still. And I happened to be in this tunnel, and there was a fence dividing the bike lanes from the pedestrian lanes. And so suddenly he had a huge bunch of obstacles. My legs were right out across the whole entire bike lane, basically, as I was playing guitar. And he just about wiped out. And it was such a close call. Because I think if he had hit me, I think he would have ended up worse than I would have. But anyway.
How did you know how did you know it was Prince on the motorcycle?
By the way, yeah, okay, well, I guess I can't be 110% on that, because he had a helmet on. So he was wearing all black. His motorcycle was all black. It wasn't the Purple Rain motorcycle. It was, but it had these gold symbols. It was right about, it was right when he just changed his name to a symbol. And these two symbols, the symbols on both sides of the handlebars on his this motorcycle had that particular symbol on there in gold. And he was a very small person.
Right, right. Like,
so
Did he stop the bike?
I'm 99% sure that that was him because I've. That's not my only Prince story. I've actually run into him a few times, but that's one of my favorites.
That was a close call.
It was a close call, and you know what? Oh, yeah, it just freaked me out. But I saw him coming around the bend, so I had like about a half a second to pull my legs back up out of the. But he just about wiped out on that fence. Anyway, yeah, so those are my, I don't know, rock stars. Classic. I don't know, how old am I? I think those are kind of classic.
Absolutely. Those are classic. And one was a very close brush, a brush with death even. Thank you for that. Floyd is in California on the Wild Card Line. Floyd, good morning. Welcome to Coast.
Good morning, Richard. I've enjoyed Coast to Coast since Art Bell, and this is my first call.
Ah, welcome aboard.
Anyway, this has to do with nightmares and PTSD.
Yes.
And I have a theory about the Brett Kavanaugh and Professor Ford fiasco. I've had experiences with PTSD, and I understand she has them also. And I'm not a psychiatrist or a psychologist, but I know the brain can play some strange tricks on you. And to some people, more extreme than others. But I believe Brett Kavanaugh 100%. I have no doubt that he is innocent. I also believe that Professor Ford is 100%. I believe she saw his face above her and the friend in the room, and they laughed at her. And I have a theory that I put together because... Brett Kavanaugh excelled both in sports and academics, you know. He was a year or two ahead of her, and I think if they were to talk to some of her close friends, that she may have had been impressed with him or had a mild crush on him. And so my theory is the lead up to this is the whole thing begins with him pushing her into a room and climbing on her and et cetera, et cetera. But it ends as she gets away from him and exits the room. She has no recollection of going there to her friends to tell them about it. That's just it. Or she doesn't know how she got home. She doesn't recall how she arrived there or where she was. And, you know, if you have a dream and you start, or a nightmare, and the thing starts, you don't go up a street and turn right and then turn left at the second mailbox and look up at the house. You know, you're in it. And that's why I believe that that's when the nightmare ended, when she exited the room. I think it was a nightmare, and I believe she's retained that. And I don't see any other explanation for it because she has no idea. She can't answer where she was, how she got there, how she left. And it just falls in with me. It's a nightmare. And I know I had, like I say, mild PTSD. I have some experiences from Vietnam that bothered me when I first got out of the service, and I didn't realize what it was, but some of them are real that I experienced, but some of them aren't. And sometimes the ones that aren't recur. And boy, I tell you, when you wake up out of that, it's real. And I think this was such a traumatic experience for her. I believe in her brain, she saw him, she believes this. And I really think that she needs some help sorting this out.
I agree. She's undergone something traumatic, and I agree. Both could be telling the truth. Both were compelling. Both seemed sincere. And without, unfortunately, any, not unfortunately, just without any corroborating evidence, zero, what are we left to do with this? I think she obviously has been traumatized, and I feel for her. Also for Judge Kavanaugh, just an absolute horror show, what took place on Capitol Hill. Floyd, thank you so much for that. Donnie's in Pennsylvania, east of the Rockies. Donnie, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Richard. How you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
Good. It's hard to follow some of these guys. Almost getting hit by a motorcycle driven by Prince. It's hard to follow, but 1999, it was Northeast Pennsylvania. It's near Erie, PA. It's called the Grape Jam. It was a three-day festival. And Mickey Hart was the headliner. And 3 days of just, you know, what you would think. Lots of bands, everybody just walking around. The performers were in the audience. And, before the grand gesture, there was a huge, huge downpour. And tents everywhere just soaked. I mean, there was no escape. People diving in the mud. Everybody was just a wreck. But this was 3 days of nonstop rock and roll in your face. And then the clouds parted and Mickey Hart, and they called themselves the Dead at that point, took the stage, and it was just remarkable. It's hard to really put in words. Like I said, it's hard to follow these guys, but, and I'm nervous.
You're doing a great job. You're doing a great job.
It was fabulous. And then the next day it was like nothing happened. The whole town was clear again, but nobody really knows what happened there. It was me and a couple of my best friends, and it was a great time. But Mickey Hart, he stood up and played the drums, which is how it used to be. You know, that's the original way to play the drums. But yeah, it was nice talking to you, Richard.
Thanks for the great call. That's a great way to end it. You did a great job closing it out. All right, I am back tomorrow night, or tonight, rather, I should say. It's tonight. I'll go home, climb into bed, and get right out, and come right back and do it all over again until I get it right. For George Norrie, Lisa Lyon, Stephanie Smith, Tom Danheiser, Dan Galante, Chris Burrows, Sean Latasseur, and Tim Banal, here in Toronto, Mike Bendixson, Rob Turner, Patrick O'Neill, and in Brantford, Scott Guitar Flicks, I'm Richard Serrett. Thank you for your ears and your voices. Your beautiful voices. Until tonight, so long for now.